Make an appointment for your booster dose against COVID-19. Visit quebec.ca/COVID-vaccine to follow the vaccination sequence plan for your area and book your appointment online. To continue protecting yourself against COVID-19 and its variants, get a booster dose and keep following distancing measures, wearing a mask, and washing your hands. The booster dose, the best way to stay protected longer. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
What's up, what's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial. Yes, we're back. It's another Tuesday evening, and you are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and on the air with us, we have tonight Tanguy Exumé, who is a father, poet, teacher, podcaster, salsa dancer, and crossfitter. He grew up in a Haitian household. He grew up in Haiti in a household with ubiquitous socio-political debates. His teenage years were filled with moments of walking with his dad in protests against military hegemony and learning about the values of democracy and the importance of the Haitian Revolution. He moved to the traditional territory of the Anishinaabeg, Haudenosaunee, Huron-Wendat Mohawk peoples in Montreal, Jojage, in 1999 to study biochemistry and criminology. During his time there, he discovered his love for the written and spoken words. And between 2007 and 2011, Tanguy did a series of live spoken word shows in Montreal where he explored the condition of the exiled Haitian, the pride of being from the first Black Republic, and socioeconomic dynamics at play in Haitian circles. Tanguy, welcome to Soul Perspectives, my friend.
Thank you so much for the invite.
And, no worries.
And I'm happy to be here on Soul Perspectives. And it's been a long time coming, man. Like, I don't know. We did an interview a while back. Eight years ago.
8 years ago?
I don't know. Like, I'm old now, so I'm losing memory. eight years ago. That's probably when it was. Yeah.
Wow. That was like when I was a year into into working here.
Yeah.
So, Tongi, you got a lot going on. But before that, we like to do a check-in. It's been almost two full calendar years now of... We're like 4 or 5 months shy of our second anniversary in this pandemic. How have you been, man? How has this pandemic been for you?
Man, it's been like everybody else, I believe, highs and lows. You know, there's some moments that you don't forget about it, but you realize certain opportunities that comes from the pandemic, or like, you know, being on quarantine, working from home, or having the privilege to work from home, and being able to connect with your family. But there's other moments that it hits you hard, right? So it's kind of, we go into that cycle of pretending that it doesn't exist and then being full on immersed in it. Myself, being a teacher, the first few months of the pandemic, I was at home teaching online, and then after that they ask us to get back to work.
Okay.
So the first year of going back to work during the pandemic was really hard because the structure of the classes changed. We were teaching like two classes every 10 weeks and then cycling through classes, like 8 classes for the year, but 4 different quarters of 10 weeks. So it was a lot to adjust to.
And is this, what level of education is this at?
High school.
Okay.
It was, I teach grade 8 to 12. So I had like 2 classes a day for 10 weeks, and each class were about 3 hours long. So imagine 13-year-old, 14-year-old sitting in a classroom for 3 hours.
That's a lot
when normally, like, you know, 60 minutes in and they already, like, you know, their eyes are already rolling. Like,
yeah, they're getting that glazed over look.
Exactly. Like, yeah.
Stop talking now.
So it's been that, but, you know, it gave me an opportunity to kind of like reflect, and I started a new project. I started a podcast, and, you know, but at the same time, it put an emphasis on the level of privilege certain of us have. Mm-hmm. And the level of privilege other people do not have. And that part makes me, it doesn't sit well with me sometimes, right? Like you realize that, oh, people can say, oh, this pandemic is the best thing that have happened to me. But I don't think it's the pandemic that's the best thing that happened to you. It's kind of like your privilege are highlighted now. So,
right. So
you could actually, you know, sit down in your home and think about a new project when there's some people that they lost their job. They don't have that opportunity. So it's quite, you know, it's a mixed match of a lot of things. So I think it put like it zoomed in on a lot of things that are prevalent in our society that we kind of like decided not to look like closely to. Right. So
that is very interesting. Because yeah, like some people like myself, I don't get to work from home. I have to, you know, go and kind of expose myself because I'm quote unquote an essential worker. And that would come with a whole level of stress, like just, you know, getting on the bus and metro and I have my mask and most people have their masks. And then you have that one person whose mask is down, they're coughing, they're, you know, and it's like, or people are touching each other and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, why don't you just respect the rules and putting other people at risk? Because the mask is not for your protection, though people want to believe that the mask is actually for everyone else's protection. You know, it blocks your saliva and your body fluids from going out there into someone else's.
That's right. Body. Yeah,
that's the essence of it. So yeah, I never really thought about it from the perspective of being able to work at home is a privilege. But yeah, I'm 100%.
Yeah, and it is. And even like as a teacher, like the pandemic started like March 13th, 2020. We went on spring break for 2 weeks. And the last staff meeting that we had, they told us, oh, well, you know, we'll see each other in 2 weeks. It's just going to be 2 weeks. Like, you know, just calm down. Everything will be resolved in two weeks. And then the Monday, right after going into spring break, the 17th, they're like, well, actually, no, like, you're just going to close everything down.
Yeah, we're closing.
But the discussion that we started to have is like, okay, we're going to teach online, but what about the parents that have four kids and they have one computer. Right. How do we manage that? Yep. Right? How do we manage that? And then there's other parents that you contact and they're like, oh, it's fine. My kid, they each have their iPad, so it's totally fine. You can contact them. And you're like, you know, automatically what we would see that is a even playing field, or what we think is an even playing field, which is education, all of a sudden you have like categories or class that are created.
Wow. Right?
And then so you're like, okay, so now, yes, some people feel good about staying at home and, you know, having different devices. And even if the devices could be like a little bit pushing it, but just being able to have your parents at home with you, guiding you through what you're doing at school is in itself a level of like, you know, a level of privilege, something that you have that doesn't other kids necessarily do not have. Some parents like you have no choice but to go to work. So what happens when they have, when the kids have to stay home and then they get the instructions and they don't understand or they cannot. So it's the layers of, you know, difficulties that this pandemic has brought is like, you know, unimaginable, like really.
Wow. Because like I even like before the first year of the pandemic, when I started working, I was working a early morning day shift and now I'm working the night shift. So that like if I were to have my child with me, it would create a whole different dynamic in terms of his sleeping and my sleeping were on completely different schedules. And like if I well fortunate enough, like the daycares are open and they're limited, and so he could go to daycare, but there's still a very, you know, I'm a single father, so I don't have someone at home, like I don't have a partner that's with me that, you know, could kind of, we could balance the, do the checks and balances. I never thought about all of these little things that come into play. Like you said, you know, like you have certain people who may have two or three kids and they're like, oh, they each have their iPads, so they're fine. But it's like, iPads are $400-$500. They're not cheap, you know? Mm-hmm. And even if you got one from way back in the day, they need to be kind of up to date. They need to be able to run certain ways. So it's like there's this whole financial level of privilege that not necessarily everyone has.
That's right.
Okay. And how, well, you're a father as well. And how has that been? How has fatherhood been for you during this pandemic?
Man, it's been like good to spend some times in close quarters with not only my youngest one, but my eldest one as well. We have two kids. My wife had a kid previously, but he lives with us and is my son. Mm-hmm. He's 22 years old now. But to spend time in a household with like, you know, your children and seeing those two boys interact, like, my joke is like sometimes I wonder who's 6 and who's 20. Okay. Like you just don't know. You know that, like, I don't know, that thing of fathers sometimes the only way that we tell our kids to stop is like, hey, just stop. Stop yelling at each other. Stop. Right? So I find myself like a couple of times just like be like, hey, like calm down. I need to like read this. Like relax, right? So
you're kind of like Kevin Hart. Hey, come here. Stop the noise. Stop.
No matter how, like, you know, you are, I'm trying to be someone that communicate my feelings and then, you know, establishing conversation with them. But sometimes you just like be like, hey, just stop. Okay, just stop what you're doing here. Right. But it's been good, man. Fatherhood's been good. I'm learning a lot. I'm growing with them. Mm-hmm. You know, like as a father, when your kid is like 2 months old, it's not the same father when your kid is like 5.
No.
You know?
Yes. Oh,
and my oldest son, when he was 13, I'm not the same father. But the other day we had a conversation like, dude, you have change. And I'm like, yeah, but you don't seem to be happy about that. It's like, no, but you know, the way that you were when I was like 14, 15 is not the same way that you are right now. And I'm like, yeah, it's because you need to adapt to what your child needs. Right at that time. So I feel like spending that time with them to connect and to go on walks and to play games at home and to have something that forces you to sit down with them made a world of difference in the level of communication that we've been able to develop. But it's something that we already had prior to the pandemic. So it's okay. Kind of like the pandemic gives like a little, you know, entry point, but it's something that my relationship with my father, I'm trying to give a little bit of that to my kids, mm-hmm. but also take it to another level, right? Like there's some moments that I had with my father where it was just like, we're sitting in his car and we're not saying a word, but we're just there.
Like, and you leave feeling full.
It's unbelievable. There was no word spoken, like maybe for 30, 40 minutes. And it's just, you're just there and you feel, I don't know, maybe that's his style. And my dad is like that. He's not full communicator per se, but mm-hmm. you know, it's like you feel his presence, even if he doesn't tell you anything, you feel he's there. And I want to give that to my kids as well. And some more, right. Mm-hmm. And things that I feel that my dad didn't give me when I was, or that I needed myself and that my dad could not provide to me in that sense, emotionally. So I'm trying to give that with my sons and, you know, so during the pandemic, we kind of like, you know, take those little checking moments to talk about stuff and go on walks and watch movies together. Even if, you know, sometimes their interests are not interests. Like, you know, I don't really like Paw Patrol. Like, I mean, you know, I don't it's not something that I would like myself as a kid. I wouldn't love Paw Patrol, right? So, but you watch Paw Patrol and then you joke around it and then you try to like see what they see and then you realize, okay, well, I might not like it, but
we can still connect on Paw Patrol.
Exactly, right? So there's that, and my oldest son is very like, you know, into philosophy and he has like a lot of like hypothetical questions that he brings you out there and so we kind of like follow their lead, really. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I've been like fortunate to grow alongside with them. So that's how it's been going, fatherhood so far. Yeah.
That's interesting. Because you said that even before the pandemic, you made a concerted effort in order to spend time with them and to connect with them. And like the onset of the pandemic has amplified that. How would you say that that's different from the quote unquote typical fatherhood? Because I'm like, there's not a lot of men, at least on the surface level that we see or hear about, that spend a lot of time with their children just in general. They're busy hustling, working hard, you know? So it's good to have this perspective of like a father that's taking the time. And now the pandemic kind of forces you to take even more time. So is this something that you think maybe will change relationships between fathers and children in the future?
It's a great question, man. I think it should. It's like my perspective is the following, is that a lot of people that are becoming parents think that because they were children, they can be parents.
Right.
And I feel like there's a level of reflection that needs to happen prior to become a parent. Mm. But that also speaks to, again, we started the conversation talking about privilege. That's also a level of privilege to be able to have a moment to reflect on what type of parent you would like to be, or to have the enough space and you know, to be conscientious of like what type of parents you would like to be. Mm-hmm. So myself, I was privileged in a sense to meet my wife when her son was 8 years old. Right. And she made it very clear that you come into our life, this is a package.
Yeah. It's like, a package deal.
It's a package deal. Like, he's attached to me. So once you enter that relationship, you enter it with him in mind as well. And for me at first, it was difficult because I'm like, I don't know anything about kids. I'm a young, like, you know, like 20, 30 years old. And then, but now I have not only a kid, but a kid that is like 8 or 9 years old. Yeah. So
he's grown.
Yeah,
that's a grown kid.
Exactly. So it took a lot of like intentional effort to sit down and connect and get to know him and be able to see the influence that me just being around would have on him. Mm-hmm. Right. So I was forced to like have that, you know, dirty work done in the in the first moments of my relationship with my wife, because it's like, well, I am here often. We are doing activities together. Then there's needs that he has. Like he probably, you know, need to be picked up from football. He probably, you know, he needs to have help from, you know, working on his homework and, mm-hmm. and whatnot. And then automatically you get into a role, right? And then your role comes with the responsibility of not only doing it well, but mm-hmm. also making sure that this person grows to be who they want to be. Right. Right. So,
and you have to keep in mind that what you want for them is not necessarily what they want for themselves.
Exactly. Exactly. Which is,
I think,
right. So
I think it's in our community, especially, is one of the things that kind of exemplifies the past parenthood, is that, you know, your parent wants you to be one of the trifecta. They want you to be a doctor, a lawyer, or an accountant. You know, you need to make 50,000 or more per year.
Yeah. So, you memorize the script, man.
Listen, I've heard it. I was fortunate in that my family was not like that, but I have enough friends and family around me, and I've heard enough of the stories. I've dated enough people that were like, yeah, I need to do this, this, and this. And I'm just like, okay,
yeah,
that's your path. But yeah, sorry, yeah. I interrupted you.
No, and it's you know, it's kind of like that work that had to be really, really intentional.
Yeah.
That I'm like, and I saw how beneficial it was for him, right? When we had conversation, he had some, you know, difficulties at school. So we had to make sure that us as parents, we were there for him. And we established a routine of like having something very trivial at the time. It was a family meeting. Mm-hmm. And the family meeting is like, you know, you sit down and every 2 weeks and you schedule, we talk about real stuff. Like we don't connect about like, oh, how are you? We come with a like, quote unquote, little agenda of like, you know, let's checking how you're doing emotionally. Let's checking how you're doing physically. Let's checking out like, how's your sleep lately? How have you been feeling? And it's not like in the passing of like, it's really intentional. It's like, we are going to talk. And if you have any grievance that you want to bring for you as a kid towards us, right?
I like this. Right? I like this.
But it was hard because, you know, like everyone is on the spot in a way, right? Everyone is vulnerable. And it might be like, yeah, last time you made a comment about this that I didn't appreciate. And I didn't, this is my perspective. And this is how I took it. Mm-hmm. What do you have to say about that? Right. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we're going to talk about it. We're going to apologize. We're going to cry. We're going to, you know, and it's not comfortable. Right.
No.
But it's kind of like, it's not comfortable at all.
No.
Don't get
I'm thinking
wrong.
About it right now. The whole hierarchy of parenthood is like gone for this conversation.
It's, of course. Exactly. Because it's like, well, we are three. And at that time we were three people. Like we are three people living in a house. Mm-hmm. Then there's things that are going to affect you. Whether I'm a parent, whether you're a kid, we are humans.
Yeah.
So this thing that I don't like, right? So we would be like having those things, right? And those checking. And then we continue that all to this day. Now it's not every 2 weeks, it's every month because he's an adult. Like, you know, you and then if you notice something, we like sometimes we have a group chat and we're like, okay, emergency family meeting later tonight. I don't care. Like we need to talk about this now.
Right.
Right.
Wow. Okay.
So developing that level of communication and conversation had made us stronger. And I think what a lot of parents that I've talked to have realized during the pandemic is how we need to go in those uncomfortable space to talk about what's going on.
Yeah.
Right. We need like, and then that pandemic, like highlight that because you like you spent months and months in the same quarters with people and you never realize I don't like this about you.
Mm.
I don't like this about you, mother. I don't like this about you, father.
And
I don't
that's like this okay. About and it's okay, and to do that because our parents would not And so, well, maybe now in the old, that they're older, we can sit down and be like, listen, you did this, this, and this. I know I've had those conversations as an adult, but as a kid, to be able to sit down and say, well, mom, when you did this, uh-oh.
Hey, listen, listen, thinking about it right now, I'm sweating. Thinking about it right now. So, dude, you don't get it. Like,
no way.
It, there's no way, man. In my wildest dream, I would not. No, hell no. Mm. Hell no.
But so, I like it, yeah, because you're treating the child as a human being as opposed to a child. And it's fascinating to me because I found that I've dated a few single mothers in my time, mm-hmm, and I found that when you talk to the child as a human, as a person who has fully formed emotions, may not be able to articulate them, but yes, you talk to them like, listen, we're both on the same level in terms of this conversation. They respond. Like I've had more positive responses from that child and more respect, mm-hmm, from that child than if I was like, you need to do this, and talking down to them, you know?
Yes, yes.
And yeah. I've asked them to engage their critical thinking, you know, like, why did you do this? And, you know, mm-hmm, I think that your mom didn't appreciate when you did this. And do you want people to do it to you? And they're like, well, exactly, no. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, like, getting those responses tells me that this kind of communication is a much better approach, just in general, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you know, it's kudos as well to their mothers and their parents to have instilled that in them too, so they can respond when they recognize it, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's something that I find also, you know, single parents are vilified in our communities, in, yes, our societies. Like, and it's kind of like, you know, you hear it all the time that, oh, well, they are from a single, like, you know, it's a single parent. And it is hard to take care of a kid, you know, by yourself. Yes. It is hard. But it is also to see people coming from single families and single homes and then being, you know, like, asserted with their emotions, you know, grounded. It's a testament of what that parent was able to do. And we need to celebrate those things.
Yeah.
Right. We need to celebrate them. But it's kind of like myself entering in and right now, like when I tell people that I have a 22-year-old son, they're like, dude, hell no. And I'm like, yes, because you know what? All that dirty work that I talked about before, it's part of parenting. And that makes him my son. Right? Yeah. Like it's very hard because it's not, it's something that requires a lot of, like, you know, and you have to be intentional. Mm-hmm. That's the word I can find. You have to be intentional. You have to go at it with the fact that I recognize that I am in this situation, that I am not your biological father or your biological parent. Mm-hmm. I'm going in there with that. I recognize this, but I am an adult that is there, that is present. So how can I influence that positively, right? Like, when I influence you, because, you know, as Caribbean people, adults around you, like, they make who you are, right? Yeah. They have kind of like a certain, you know,
influence. Right
influence on you, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes there's a lot of, there's case of abuse and stuff like that happens, and that we should not, you know, dismiss that. However, as adults, like, as people in communities, like, you take care of each other,
yeah,
right? So if I am in an environment and I am with my friends and then their kids are there and the parent cannot attend to the kid, then it's my responsibility as an adult to make sure that this kid is being, you know, taken care of or, mm-hmm, or protected, right? Or, mm-hmm, safe. So that's the mentality with which I entered that relationship of like, okay, well, I'm an adult, I'm here. Yes, I'm interested in your mother for sure, but it's not, that's not only it, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's other things to take care of. So, yeah.
Boy, just in case you're tuning in for the first time this evening, we are speaking to Tanguy Exumé, who is a father, poet, teacher, podcaster, salsa dancer, CrossFitter, And we are having a really, really good conversation just about fatherhood. And we haven't even gotten to talking about all the other things that Tongi is up to. We do have to take a quick break. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
It's way too heavy. The book is too heavy. Yeah. Bring a whole lot. Bring a whole lot of a ton of love. There might be 50 of y'all, nah, but there's a ton of us. Cold in the winter, ready for summer ball. Heavy season with a ton of trucks. Yeah, a ton of ball. Bring a whole lot of a ton of ball. Bring a whole lot of a ton of ball. It might be 50 of y'all, but there's a ton of us. Bring another scale.
Bring it.
It's too heavy. Bring another scale. A crump way too heavy. Bring another scale.
Damn.
It's too heavy.
Damn.
It's too heavy. My crump is way too heavy. Bring another scale.
Bring it.
It's too heavy. I said bring another scale.
Another one.
A crump is way too heavy. Bring another scale. This is too heavy. This is too heavy. Man, it's too heavy. Bring a whole lot of
it. A lot of it.
A ton of buff. It might be 50 of y'all,
50 of y'all,
but there's a ton of us. Cold in the winter, ready for summer ball.
Keep it cold, boy.
Heavy season, with a ton of trucks.
Damn.
A ton of ball. Bring a whole lot of a ton of ball.
Yeah.
Bring a whole lot of a ton of ball. It might be 50 of y'all, but there's a ton of us. Time to wait out. You're on your way out. Sniper mode, hit him from way out.
Charles Lowe's town.
Take it to the roof, boy. Ah, take it to the roof, boy. Wait out. You on your way out.
The Association des Services de Réhabilitation Sociale du Québec is filing a class action suit. If you were strip searched between July 13th, 2006 and July 1st, 2011, if you were in one of the following facilities, Bordeaux, Rivière-des-Prairies, Roberval, Saint-Jérôme, or the male sector of Quebec City, you may be able to be part of this claim. For complete details, go to asrsq.ca/class action. That's asrsq.ca/class action. Claims must be filed before January 16th, 2022.
Yes, 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 we're back once again this evening. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and I am speaking with Tongi Exumé, who is Haitian from Haiti, of course. Duh. And he currently lives in the territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nation. I apologize for that mispronunciation. Where he moved in 2008 to further his studies and realize his passion lies in working with and inspiring youth to find their voices and passions. And so he pursued a career in teaching. His Haitian roots are at the forefront of his teaching practice, where he constantly highlights Black perspectives and Black experience, as he believes it is through education that we reach collective liberation. Tongi teaches French, philosophy, and social studies, and in 2021 he started a podcast called Teach Reach, where he explores stories that have shaped his life and interacts with other teachers, coaches, and friends. Tongi, thank you so much for the conversation so far. It's good to have a conversation about fatherhood, especially just as Black men, then, you know, compounding it by having this whole pandemic situation where we have to, there's a different way of kind of being fathers within this kind of closed environment. At least some of us get to, you know, be in that closed environment with our children. But during the break, we had talked a little bit about the fact that you're teaching French in Canada, and I love that in your bio, because I have your full bio here, you always make a point to acknowledge the natives and the territories in which you've traveled or you've worked. So Montreal, you acknowledge the Mohawk peoples here in Montreal, in Jojage, as it is as is the original name of the island, uh-huh. and of course the nations in the natives in the territory of the place now called Vancouver. Uh-huh. As we know, as we both know, native languages are dying at a despicable rate. You know, per year there's X amount of languages that are just completely lost. How does that teaching? I'm because we're on a black show, we can say we can, as a teaching a colonizer language. How yeah, does that yeah. like and your awareness of that affect the way that you approach teaching?
Man, it's a lot of reflection and a lot of like doubt and sometimes heavy guilt mm-hmm. of teaching. Couple of layers. So if we start about teaching French, there's a lot of like, it's always about, you know, ton orthographe et tes fautes de grammaire. Yeah. And it's like, that's one of the main points of teaching French. It's like making sure that the person can articulate the language to present the words. But every single time you like focusing a lot on like, did they spell right? Did they say that right?
And the conjugation of their grammar.
That's right. And there's a level of like, I'm the teacher. I tell you, this is the way that you write it. And it doesn't matter what you thought, like, right. you know, was correct.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to judge your grammar. I'm going to judge what you do. So there's already that level of like intervention that I feel sometimes uncomfortable with because you get full sometimes because sometimes a student will hand in a work and the grammar is spotless, but there's no depth in what they said.
Right.
However, whenever you mark this as incorrect, quote unquote, you will get like, well, but the student wrote something like that was pretty, but you're like, yeah, it was pretty, but there's no depth. So there's always that dance that you're doing between like, you know, the format and the depth of what they are saying. Mm-hmm. So already this doesn't sit really well with me sometimes because like, oh my God, like I'm placing a judgment, but that's kind of like the role of a teacher in yeah. a way. But yeah. the system forces you to reward the grammar as opposed to the depth. And then you have to find a way to find a balance.
Right.
And then recognizing that we are on unceded territories, on territories where treaties were quote unquote signed, but they were lied
respected.
To.
Yeah.
And then you're like, so I'm on a territory that is not mine, that mm-hmm. is unceded. And then I am in the language of the people that colonized and took over that land. Mm-hmm. And I'm receiving special federal funds to teach that language when the main people of the land for whom the land belongs to mm-hmm. do not receive the funds that I have for them to give their language or teach their language to their kids and their descendants. And that part like doesn't sit well with me.
Yeah.
Now I don't have a solution per se, but I think that it starts with my students in my classroom learning French, understanding the complexity of the language that they are learning mm-hmm. and the context in which they are learning that language. It's important for them to understand it because then they can realize, oh, wow, I have a privilege to have a language, but at whose expense I am getting that language. Mm. Who's mm-hmm. not getting the resources, right? And those are things that we think about in my classroom where, and because every time that I wrestle with something, I bring it to the classroom.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, you know what? I've been thinking about that lately. It doesn't sit well with me. Let's talk about it.
Wow.
And they're like, and some of them are like, oh, that sounds like a you problem. I'm like, no, we are all in here. We are all using taxpayers' money.
Wow. Right? They have the audacity to be like, that's a you problem?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Like I have a free flow conversation with my students. Okay. So I like when they do that. I'm like, okay, because you know, sometimes I can be like, that's a you problem. Like,
right. Let's go. Right. Oh, so they're just turning it around on you, trying to pull a fast one.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So but you know, that's something that I've been wrestling with a lot. It's kind of like that position of, you know, teaching a language that's from the colonizers and also knowing even myself as a Haitian man, the relationship that we have with the French language and the relationship that we have with the French, you know, culture. People in British Columbia call me, "Oh, you're French," and I'm like, and I always like stop it right away. Like, I'm not French.
No, back
I'm
it
not
up.
French. I speak French. I'm not French. And but that relationship of like, oh my God, so this is a language that was given to us by a colonizer.
Let me rephrase that for you. It was shoved down our throats. And to be to be poetic about it, our tongues were ripped from our mouths as they were replaced.
Yes, I agree with
that.
With
these white tongues.
That's true. Right? So shoved down our throat and that we fought to have our freedom, mm-hmm. right? So it's always like the identity, the multiple identities that makes who we are. Mm-hmm. It's sometimes hard to articulate because, well, I speak French. I am having a job because I speak French.
Yeah.
Right? But, you know, I when people ask me what's my main language, I said it's Creole.
Right.
That's my mother tongue, Creole.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I happen to speak French, but it's my mother tongue is Creole. But it's an intentional, you know, statement that I'm making, that I'm like, no, my mother tongue is Creole, and then I speak French. Like it's kind of a secondary. Like the first language that I spoke was Creole, and that's my mother tongue. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like making sure that myself, having had the luxury to grow up in a place where, you know, I could express myself in my mother tongue and express my culture and live in this place, and even also navigate the layers that exist in Haiti. When you speak French, you are, you know, of the upper class and you can express yourself in a certain blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Right. And then arriving in a place where I'm like, holy shit, now I'm taking funds away from people that could be able to, you know, express their culture.
Yeah.
And that's something that doesn't sit well with me. So I try to have my students to reflect on that, you know, and by having them to reflect on that, then we can, you know, start the conversation or expand the conversation to be like, this is something that needs to be dealt with. Why don't we have schools that have, you know, First Nations language, you know, immersion in it to learn a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm. So. What I just thought of a question and an idea. What do your classes? What's the format of your classes? Your French classes specifically.
Well, you know, we have like typical 27 to 30 students, mm-hmm. Per class.
Sorry, I asked the wrong question.
Okay. Yeah.
It's what are you teaching? So yes, you're teaching the French language, but like, what is the content?
Oh man. Like that's the beautiful part about the curriculum that we have here is that I can go anywhere I want.
Right.
There's no set textbooks. There's no set, there's kind of like concepts or skills that we want students to have, mm-hmm. but you can go anywhere. So right now I'm doing, well, at the end of the first term, I was doing a slam poetry unit with my students.
Okay.
And they all had to develop a poem, a slam poem on being 13. What does it mean to be 13? Right. What does that mean to be 13 years old? And the way that I frame it is that the only person that can know how to be 13 is you guys.
Yeah.
I'm not 13. I used to be 13 in a different place. Right.
In a different time.
A long time ago. You guys are 13 right now. What are the challenges that you might have right now that defines what it means to be 13.
Mm-hmm.
But we started that journey into exploring. There's a song by Corneille called Tout le Monde.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like where Corneille is like really, you know, describing what it is to be a man, mm-hmm. to be a human, right? And then how, like, you know, we share certain things, like we all get offended about certain things, but we say that it's not our fault, it's other people's fault. And so I'm like, we explored that, and then we went into, okay, well, Can you talk about what it is to be 13 generally, and then a little bit more specifically? Some students will have different, they know, okay, well, they're all 13, they're all in grade 8, they're all in the same schools, but, you know, some of them, their parents are divorced. Some of them, their parents are remarried. Some of them, they just had a little brother. Some of them, they are having like terrible anxiety. Some of them, they are realizing that they are, you know, they are being aware of their mental health and a lot of challenges that they themselves have. So right. It's very personalized in that sense. But in terms of content, I am free to bring anyone I want in my classroom, to bring any content that I feel necessary. And I try to bring, you know, like voices that they might not necessarily hear in their day-to-day life, right? So
because why I ask you that? Is because, you know, I was like, okay, since you're on native territory and you obviously don't have the language background in terms of native languages in order to teach that, but what about teaching native history in Canada?
Oh yeah, like, yeah, we do that all the
time. Okay, great.
Oh yeah, all the time.
Like, but in French,
through First Nations voices, like exactly. Through their own voices. Like yeah. My grade 8, we explored, beginning of the year, we explored poems by Joséphine Bacon, great poet, right? Like, and what I liked is that when she publishes her poems, they are in two languages,
right.
In French and in Innu. So it's like we are looking at the languages side by side.
Wow.
But it's kind of like a political act that she's doing. She's like, this is it. This is where I am. Right. I'm giving you that entry into my culture in the French so you can understand. But this is what I truly, truly want to say.
Woo!
So it's kind of like, it's so beautiful, right?
Yeah.
With my philosophy students, we explored a meditation book by an Ojibwe author, Richard Wagamese.
Yes, I just read right? The Indian Horse.
Yeah. So it's like we're looking at those perspectives. We're giving the voice to authors and artists in the classroom so they can understand those perspectives and realize that, like First Nations people have a voice, number one. And number two is like there's a different way to look at things, right? There's there's the first people's principle of learning that we're following. And then I read that with my students maybe every 3 weeks, because within the first people's principle of learning, it's not focused on your grade. It's not focused on your... It's focused on like how you're able to develop your environment and your community to grow as an individual, but it still centers you into a community. So every now and then I try to remind my students of like, you know, we need to remember that we are trying to learn through First People's Principle of Learning because it is something that is at the core of what makes us to be human. We need to belong in a community. And whenever one of us in the community is not, you know, up to par to what the community is looking for, it's our job to uplift them, to like, you know?
Yeah.
So we kind of like make sure that each of us in the classroom, we understand, you know, that we are part of a community, that you're not just there to get your marks and then you just get out.
Yep.
Right? And then you'll spend 10 months in the year with the same people in the classroom. So you better be a community.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
100%. I'm glad to know that you are, you know, taking that initiative. I mean, that shows a lot of foresight, a lot of understanding and respect for the native cultures that have been here for millennia before we or any other people, you know, have been here before. Much respect for that. Much respect for that. We do have to take a quick break. Just in case you tune in for the first time, we are speaking to Tanguy Exumé, who is a teacher in Vancouver. And he teaches French, philosophy and social studies, and as we've been talking, he does his best to respect the native people whose land, whose unceded territory we are on, by incorporating teachings and books and learnings from native people as well into his class. We do have to take a quick break, but we'll be back. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Mama, I made it. Papa, I made it. Through the pebbles and the storm, I learned to carry on. And everything that you have done has helped me overcome. Mama, I made it. Papa, I made it.
Yo, mince me, brother. How your mama crying? I got these weak dudes dipping like a limbo line. 514, now's about my time. Word to Dr. Frankenstein. He's screaming I'm alive. And so well, like a bucket and a rope in it. Obama swagger, put the change and the hope in it. Hold the flow down like a news anchor. Do it heavily medicated, so now I'm giving dope music. I'm not a rapper, I'm a general up in the movement. And what I value most, I can never lose it. See, radiation, hardest 5 weeks of my life. And there is no harder other brother on the mic. So I give them what they need, they say what they like. And when you hear it, it's like riding a bike. You hesitate at first, then remember how it's done. Cause it's classic, but it's fresh, and it's smart, and it's fun.
I made it, Papa, I made it. Through the pebbles and the storm, I learned to carry on. And everything that you have done has helped me overcome. Mama, I made it, Papa, I made it.
And I radiate like a star. I'm so driven, I am whipping more than your car. Words epic, floating back like Star Wars. Hospital ward, IV was on my cord. I break a weak dude like a paradigm. They say I'm too complex when I write a rhyme. I'm just well read.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and on the air with us this evening, we have Tongi, who is a father, a poet, a teacher, a podcaster, salsa dancer, and CrossFitter. Before the break, we were talking to Tongi about the fact that we're on unceded territory, all of Canada, all of North America, and Middle America and South America. It's all in territory of native people, and the respect that he's the conscientious respect that he's paying to the native folks, and to make his students aware of the fact that we're on different territory, we're on territory that does not belong to us. If you read 21 Things You May Not Know About the Indian Act, you will have a very, very good understanding of what happened over the past few centuries and like what has been done to native peoples. Tongi, thank you so much for being here once again. You mentioned that with your students you continuously go over the First Peoples principle of learning. Could you tell us what that is? I thought it was a book. During the break you explained to me that it's not a book, it's actually a document. What exactly is it?
Well, it's a compilation of different statements about what learning involves and what learning is, right? But learning with a lens on First People's way of being, mm-hmm. right? So a couple of like, you know, examples that involve like, you know, learning is recognizing the consequence of one's action, right? So you might think, well, you know,
that is it's so succinctly put, right? Because every it action is. Has yes. mathematics. You know, if you get That's it right. wrong, there's a consequence.
That's right.
If you're a farmer, you know, if you don't plant your crops at the right time, there's a consequence. That's or a
right.
benefit.
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah. And this others like, you know, learning recognizes the role of indigenous knowledge. Learning is embedded in memory, history, and story. Learning requires explorations of one's identity. So it's kind of like a lot of things that, you know, and when we read that with my students, I'm like, where does it mention that you need to have an A to be successful? Where does it mention that you need to be the top of the class? Where does it mention that, you know, it's breaking the mold that we say that this is the format that you need to be placed in our quote unquote hierarchy, right? It's like, where do we see that in there? And it's like, when you read this, aren't you more at peace than if you read that you have to get 80% to pass this class?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So how do you feel in the body when you read this, right? You feel like, oh, I can do that. Like, it involves generational role and responsibilities. Mm-hmm. I can do that. It involves like memory, history, and story. I can do that. Like, it involves recognizing my identity. Yeah, I can do that. Mm-hmm. Because this is who we are at the core. So we go through that, you know, and I have like a poster of that in my classroom, where sometimes when I feel like the focus is shifting towards something that I'm not feeling too comfortable with, or they are like maybe forgetting what mm-hmm. what the ultimate goal is, then we read that again. I'm like, let's take some time. Let's just reflect. Let's maybe pick one of them that, you know, you didn't know before, you didn't pay attention to. And then like write a couple lines on your journal. And then let's just think about that. Right. So,
yeah. So
it's kind of like taking that dialogue a little bit for them to understand, because so like that, when we focus on those principles of learning, when we are confronted in things in our society that happens, we are able to reflect on them properly. Mm-hmm. We are able to like to see, oh, that doesn't sit well with indigenous ways of being, right?
Yeah.
Which is very community centered, right? Yeah. And the fact that there's the last one is like, learning involves recognizing that some knowledge is sacred and only shared with permission and or in certain situations. Right. So it's like, yeah, there's certain things that requires and who gives us the permission. And
right.
That includes the elders in our community that are the one that carry the knowledge, because knowledge is sacred.
And
right?
depending on the community that you're from, you might have to get that permission from spirit.
Exactly.
You know, like
exactly.
Even the elders are not allowed to provide that permission.
Yeah.
Wow. And like, I think about us as Haitians, and I'm also Jamaican, and I was able to delve deeply into spirituality while I was growing up. And, you know, there is always a sense of like, you have to get permission from this at the spiritual level to do certain things.
Yes.
Because it would become a violation of us, as because we're all spiritual beings to an extent, and there is obviously levels to this, but mm-hmm. Oh, that resonates so deep with me, man. I'm gonna get a copy of that document. I need a copy of that document for sure.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
But we've talked a lot about teaching and what you're doing, but you're also you have so many hats that you wear. So you're also a salsa dancer and a CrossFitter. The CrossFitting, you've put that up on social media, bro.
No,
I remember,
brother,
when CrossFit was like first coming in, and it was like everybody was getting on top of that. It's really intense.
It's intense.
Like, what made you decide to go into CrossFit?
Oh, that's a good question, man. Like, I was always interested in like athletics and sports and whatnot. I'm a sports buff. I memorize stats.
Okay.
I watch sports.
Okay.
Like, my time is spent between reading books and the only time I watch TV is to watch sports.
Okay.
So I love sports. I love competition. And every single time that I was looking for a space to be competitive without being repulsive to people around me, you know, like,
okay,
you want to win, you want to be not the best, but you want to like go out there and kick someone's ass, right? And then it's like, but you can't do that in a regular gym, like that's creepy and that's like weird,
yeah.
Right? You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
So you don't want to do that, like, so then, in 2014, my wife was pregnant, and then she saw that I really wanted to get something like, you know, competitive. Mm-hmm. So we went to like, we dropped by at a local CrossFit gym, and then she bought me a 10 punch pass, I started the first class, like within 10 minutes, I'm like, this is it. That's the thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, it does the trick. It kind of like, it's very technically sound. It's very methodical, which are things that I like. I like kind of like a certain structure,
right?
But it's also constantly varying, like what you do, right? Mm-hmm. In order for you to be the fittest you can be. Right. And it also always highlights your weaknesses. Mm-hmm. So every single time that you go in the gym, your weaknesses are highlighted, and then you have possibility to work on them. Right. And then
It also has the competition aspect of it, because
exactly,
you know,
every scored,
you have all of the people that are in the gym, and then, you know, this person did 10, this person did 20, did 15.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So it goes, and then it's a friendly competition, because once the time expires, and then you're like, you're done, and then you're sweaty, and that's pre-COVID, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, you're sweaty all over the place, and then, you know, you give a fist bump, and then you're like, you joke around about like, man, I felt like you were getting me in there, and then, you know, and then you get like, okay, I'll get you next time. So it's a friendly competition.
Yeah.
That's the part that I like about it. But also, most importantly, it's just like the community of it. The fact that if you don't show up for 2 days, someone will call you to be like, are you okay?
Wow.
Right? Like, they will reach out to you. Like, people develop friendship. People develop. So, yes, it's a workout regiment, but it's a community as well that, you know, people becomes friends. People get married. People get kids. They become family. And then I can bring my kid. Like, I could, like, give my wife a break at home, right? When she was on mat leave, I finish work and I get the kid, put him in the car seat, and then, you know, feed him and put him in a corner with some like balls and everything. And then I'm working out. And then maybe there's a parent that, you know, finish workout and can keep an eye on them. And then it's like that community feel is so great in there. So that's one of the thing. And I don't know, it makes me, it's the 1 hour in the day where I don't have to remember what my name is. I don't have to remember